when you think of life histories, are these the types of questions you're asking, or are you asking different types of questions? The stuff from the Yukon Koyukuk School District, I think generally follows this type of format, although there's a lot of how-to type stuff in there, you know. Oscar Nektoon talking about how to. Personal pictures will help you to establish things to talk about in a person's life, you know. What was going on in your life at the time of this picture? Where were you located? What were you doing? Who was living with you then? What was going on? And as that documentation gets farther along, you can flesh that out with additional consideration.
You know, when you look at something like this, it seems like that's the way people live around here, because everything is seasonal. And then you would almost like ask, okay, why? And then the game is here at this time of the year. You say, why? Where is it coming from? And why is it coming this way? And how long will it take to pass through our town? Where will it go after? Is there going to be, is it going to be going through every year? Was it going through during your lifetime, the lifetime before?
Periods of abundance, periods of starvation, periods of game movements. The year we saw the first moose, the year that the red squirrels came, whatever.
Yeah, there were personal tragedies. The year somebody died or somebody broke his leg, he couldn't go hunting. All those sort of things. For want of a shoe, the horse couldn't go and couldn't go to bring a message. They lost the battle, lost the war.
Yeah.
Well, the whole country changed.
Personal circumstances. Some of those things are...
It could be fit to everything. It could be environmental. I mean, maybe he lost his shoe because the snow didn't melt that time and he slipped on the snow. Everything fits.
Getting those things to integrate is a little bit tricky, but asking the questions is the first step. The key in there. Let's try to identify some historical themes here. I think the way to do this is maybe if you mention some historical themes, and we'll try to order them in some sort of graphic form and see what we come up with. Pick some appropriate colors. When you think of the history of the area, what do you think about? Julie, what do you think of?
Whalers, missionaries, educators, government people.
Okay.
And I guess those I view as groups of people who have made an impact on the people and environment.
Yeah. And those three are really kind of connected because the missionaries followed the whalers. And then the government got involved so that they kind of form a cumulative package.
That's the way you see it, but from the way.
Only way
no,
I can
okay.
see it.
No. You say when somebody follows this reason, why people used to gather out here to chase away all the boats and all other races of people at one time. This is the last place that was ever where people had ever come.
Change back.
And they, Manila supposedly said, let them in. So he let in 3 missionaries, and after that came the miners and the whalers and everybody else. So it all starts with this man Manila and why and where he got his messages to let these people in. Whereas before, the shamans, angakoks, were the political leaders who were the powerful men in certain areas, whether good or bad. They were like the senators and the chiefs and stuff like that, but he was the one main person. So it really comes down to that man Manila. That's my interpretation of the history here and why it's gone this way.
What about before Manila?
Before it was all the people gathered, they fought amongst themselves, of course. But it was like you could fight in your own family, but don't let any outsiders in. And they never did until he said, let them in.
What about the big gatherings out here in Salt? Were people from as far away as Siberia?
Oh, yeah, those were
Canadian
like come in, and you'd come in and pick up the rifles and the trades, what you need, and they had to leave after, like a truce or a laying down of beliefs and wars of words and ideas until they got what they wanted, which happens in any place where you have these kinds of things happening, you know?
How long did that last, those trade fairs?
Probably as, you know, from
past
when...
Past the turn of the century, huh? Up to when? Let's do it this way. What are some other historical happenings or themes that we might develop? Manila, when was Manila?
Late 1800s.
Up to the turn of the century?
Yeah, 1897, French church came in.
How does he spell that?
M-A-N-I-I-L-A-Q, I think.
What would you see as other significant historical events or being?
You can go back so far. Right, there's, okay, you take Indian cultures in North America, they talked about three lives, or three ways the world was before the fire came, after the water came, and after the fire, and whatever, you know. What they're talking about are ice, when it froze, when ice ages came, and when you had the giant floods, and when there was volcanic activity. You could go back that far. And we had said earlier how supposedly the people started up at Kobo. That's where there's a mountain up there called Umebirg, where the giant boat landed when the world was flooded.
Huh. How do you handle that type of material?
What was that?
How do you handle that type of material? What do you do with it? What's the reference to when they talk about where the boat landed? What's the reference to? Is there a particular reference?
My opinion of that is like that's where boat landed and where everybody got off, and from there, the families that came down off of that, those are our immediate ancestors that we have supposedly oral history of where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows where they came from before that? I mean, the boat was floating around, you know.
Those, there are certain accounts that that we can't test at this point. They occurred so far back that we have stories about them, and we must accept the stories as testimony, but there's no other way we can get
physical evidence.
Physical evidence.
Can you even go? There was a time where this area right here was tropical area, where the Eskimos didn't have to wear any clothing.
If they were Eskimos.
They were. There's stories around this area, even they go as far as gnome. It's mostly sort of like a gnome version, though, but they do.
Yeah.
When that story is told, they talk about this area right here,
uh-huh.
This whole Hobuck area, that they name places like Hobuck. Maybe it's more recent than, more, maybe it's even before the flood or something.
So we have a time period back here where we're it's a story time in a sense. It's a time when we can't prove that things occurred empirically. We can't prove in terms of, you know, bringing together evidence, but we believe these things are to happen. Occurred because the oral stories have been passed on that these things happen. It's almost a mystical time. It's almost a time that's unprovable, but part of our heritage, part of this picture.
Yeah, and you could almost, okay, during times before when you didn't have, if you look, okay, being an anthropologist, you could look at the old bones and tell how healthy the people were. And you could go to look at their bones and their bodies during certain times of history when outside influences were to help shape how they were going to be. And you could see, like I said, by statistics, how unhealthy they're becoming now,
mm-hmm.
compared to times before.
Mm-hmm. Let's call this a prehistoric record. And the evidence there, of course, is the...
You say your prehistoric?
Let's say the prehistoric.
Okay, no, we can say yours, the outside world's prehistory, because we believe, you know... I mean,
well,
I believe that's our history.
Let's use the word archaeological.
Okay.
And then we have this meaning... then we want to talk about this period of time when things were different than they are now, when the types of causality that we see happening today was different, when there was a possibility of an ark appearing in the interior, or when there was a possibility of a giant flood. It's really hard to get at, but there is, I think, a separation here between certain types of stories which deal with long, long ago, when life was different than it is today, and those stories which relate to individuals, to events, to places which occurred when the world in a more recent time. I'm not doing very well on it, but maybe you can help me out with some of the accounts that you hear from people.
Well, like in some of the people, you know, just like what they do is said that when they tell about the flood, they sort of document that with, you know, these seashells. They can find them up in those mountains, way up there in Kobuk area, on top of those mountains, or right around the top, right there.
But when the earth was different, when something catastrophically was different. What other types of stories are there? What types of stories might have been told by old timers when they related important things to people? They talk about how to make things and how to do things. But they talk about ancestors, and they talk about trips they have made, migrations, and movements.
Yeah, like, Buckland and Daring is, there's like Norvik, it never was in existence. It started out from Daring, and he moved over. That's how it was Newbrick. Then the white people couldn't say it, so their name started adapting to Norvik, because he's the same and stuff.
Did that occur after the turn of the century?
Yes.
So you got, in the past, during the past, there were different migrations of people, right? I mean,
even in Kayana,
yeah,
they used to call even before they have in Kayana, they call it Iksivik, and there was another one a little below Kayana called Uksik, and there was another one for Norvik, what they call also Uksik.
So you have migrations and movements of people, and we assume that that happened back in here, you know, because archaeologically they find huge populations moving at different times in history, as well as the accounts which tell us about these movements of people. What about game fluctuations? Wildlife.
Usually the wildlife changes because of the weather changes. In other words, it depends on what kind of year that is. If it's a mild winter, there's usually a lot of games. If it's real, real harsh, then there's not that many games. Go along with those.
Mm-hmm. What are some other historical factors? What about epidemics?
Disease, yeah.
That would be pretty much with the miners, probably the turn of the century, or
yeah,
maybe even a little before.
We come out with the incurable diseases.
The flu of 1919, flu epidemic of 1919, a rash of other earlier ship diseases, and then probably continuing on in small spurts as...
Yeah, still continuing today.
Yeah, as the Hong Kong flu, or was there Asian flu, and other ones get circulated? German measles.
And we must be pretty healthy people. We never did pass any to an end of the world. We see a disease that's a Eskimo flu.
There used to be rumors or stories that the government didn't want any little bighorns up in this area, so they sent some germs up here for early germ warfare to try to decimate or wipe out a good part of the population so they wouldn't have these big battles. Did you ever hear stories like this?
No, but that's something that you would want to, in terms of the history of this area, would be very important, would be the atomic energy testing, Project Chariot, which would be in the late 60s.
And not only that, there's, you know what they call these Inyokons?
Which one?
Inyokons. There's these people that travel right now, you know, even today, where they come around in the fall time, migration of some kind of people come through here and they go out that way, then they come back again. I don't know exactly who they are. And for a while, the people used to think that they were the Athabaskan Indians. They used to probably be, because they used to have that warfare going between the Athabaskan and the Eskimos going into Athabaskan country and scaring each other off. And as the thing goes on, is that you know, I always keep my ear open on that, and one time I heard where this one person from Barrow or someplace mentioned that he has been to all these areas in the Kobuk River area with the government. And I was thinking, man, you know, it's like maybe they're the ones, you know, it's like they've been going through and they've been doing all this research on our land, and that's how come we have all these national monuments and all those other crazy things around here. Because our land is surrounded with all those parks and national monuments and everything.
Okay, let's take a minute on that. Project Chariot.
And not only that, look at that.
Land claims.
Look at Pet Four.
Yeah, land claims and national interest lands.
Before, you know, just like the government knew about 50 years, even before the impacts knew that there were oil out there, but they never did everything that was that important. And the government find that out, so when World War came around, there was the excuse to make a reserve.
Yes, but look at what's happening at the national and international worldwide scale. You know, when you look at something like oil, the economics of oil, there's one level of analysis if you ask somebody in Wainwright, Barrow, Atkinson, or something about Pet 4. But there's quite a different analysis going on if you look at the international scene and you look at the OPEC nations. You look at how oil prices have risen and the types of pressures that have been put on it. So that affects people right here, but the forces are international in scale. And that's the reason why in the historical documenting, you want to be concerned not just about what's going on, not just what you get orally here, but also what you can get from other source material, because it will tell you about those international and national trends. What are some other historical themes or events? This whole issue of land and national interest land, the whole dividing up of Alaska, the state land disposal programs, the national interest lands, private land ownership, such as NANA, each of these is creating a new phase of history, right? And you're seeing it kind of unfold. What about some more historical events? What was significant when you were growing up was the children.
The lifestyle was we moved from camp to camp.
When was the shift between a rural lifestyle and an urban?
It depends on different families. Like my family, for my family, we came in real late till 1968. It was the first time we ever had stovewall, and people had stovewall 10 years before that in their homes. Stovewall, stoves.
And also, how many white people lived in certain villages, because Yinyibach people are usually quiet and reserved and won't be saying nothing. But the more white people that moved into the village, they're the vocal ones. And a lot of times, because they're vocal, people will listen. And then things start to happen after that. You look at, too, the way the Bureau of Indian Affairs came in and took all of the children, shipped them out to different
boarding homes.
And I could see that as a change of a lot of people's health.
From 1947 on, right? That was earlier.
Edgecombe earlier for other places,
1800,
too.
So mission schools were the first, and then we had boarding schools, and then we have development of what we call what? REIs? REAs.
Well, they had boarding schools first.
Yeah,
had that, okay.
Boarding schools here. Then the REA, right?
Do you suppose that had anything to do with the statehood?
I don't know.
We didn't even know that.
It didn't make any difference.
Like during the Depression, that Depression that they had down in the States didn't affect this area.
The local high schools occurred, I think, out of a court decision called the Molly Hooch case, in which a young woman claimed that she should be able to, as a privilege, you know, as a right, have schooling, local schooling. And she resented the fact that she had to travel hundreds of miles to get a high school education. And I think that the Molly Hooch decision was what fostered the development of the REAs, but then that state money going into that.
So, my question was, if Alaska were still a territory, then it would, I think, be exempt from a lot of state and federal obligations? I don't know.
Before the Molly Hooch case, there were a lot of people who complained about this and wanted their children to stay home. But now, because of radio stations and newspapers, people are becoming more aware, and they had this moral obligation. They used to take kids away, just whole families, and line them up and shave their heads and de-louse them, and, you know, the terrible things that happened in concentration camps. It's the truth.
Yeah, that may be the truth, but the comparison with the concentration camps doesn't ring.
But if you were there,
concentration is to concentrate a group of people in one place and keep them in a camp or a pen. And we were on a rock where we went.
Edgecombe?
Yes.
I've often wondered.
Alcatraz.
I often thought that a history of Mount Edgecombe would be very interesting to speak to people who went to Mount Edgecombe and to look at the type of education they got and then have them compare that with what they see their children getting now. And
we didn't know what was happening. I think after we suddenly, some people were sort of vocal about it, but.
Why is there such a push to keep Mount Edgecombe?
Because once you lose that, then you lose your. Yeah, that trust relation between the government.
Is it purely a political one of the trust relationship?
Probably.
Or is there something deeper?
I think to it, it brought the group of the people of Alaska together, the young people, and brought problems from all area together so they could get it. They got the education, then they got an understanding of what was happening in other areas. When I was a kid in Noatak, Narvik was so far away, they talked about, well, maybe next year we'll go there, you know. And when you're a kid, maybe next year is like waiting for Christmas. You know how long that takes.
Yeah. You mean that they would develop a school in Narvik? Or I don't understand your example.
Okay. Let's see. How about I say this now? Well, at one time, because of no radio, no newspapers and things like that, everything was so far away. Mm-hmm. The world was at a war. They had a depression, like Bob said. We never knew about that. I mean, you heard about it, like, hey, they're really suffering outside, but who cares? That's the outside world, you know?
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, the world is smaller. Huh?
Yeah.
And now it's like this, and it's so quick, and the world is here before we have a chance to get ready for it.
Mm-hmm. So there's been a breakdown in the isolation between lifestyle here and